Good afternoon, Laurie. It's a pleasure and honour to have you on the Sideline View. Thanks for joining me.
My pleasure, Damien. Let's go.
Yeah, look, where do we start? I'll throw Toowoomba at you early in your early childhood, basically.
Oh, Toowoomba, mate. That's a shocking place. I played a bit of rugby up in Toowoomba. I was housemaster at Toowoomba Grammar. I taught at Harristown High School, physical education. I thought it was going to be a real nice place, but the climate up there killed me, mate. I finished up teaching phys ed on the oval on a chair because I've only got one lung.
Yep.
And the climate just killed me, my asthma and everything. So I resigned from the education department and went back to Townsville just to get well again. My dad had the Tobruk pool up there. I didn't have a job.
Yep.
He had the Tobruk pool where all the Olympians trained when I was a kid. And he said, well, start teaching kids to swim here. You can do something. You can't just blood talk me.
Yeah.
He was an old shearer's cook. He said, you can't blood talk me. I said, I'm into it, Dad. I'm into it. Give me some water space. And we went from there.
So
we finished up. Yep. Yeah. Mate, I finished up with the swag of state champions. Kids, 8 years in a row, I taught to swim the kid that won the state 10-year-old championship. And I finished up 27 state champions. We came down to the Queensland Championship. We used to come down the age championships every year. And one of my boys, Larry Forsyth, who's still in Masters and winning all the Masters around the country, he beat Stephen Holland. And the Hollands became good friends of mine. And I went to America about that time, because I wanted to learn more. My kids were getting good,
yep,
and I wanted to learn more. So I saw Don Gamble come out to Australia. He was the head coach of the USA at the time, and a great guy. And I asked him, could I come over? And he put me up at UCLA, the University of Southern California over there.
Dude, I straight to the top, Laurie.
Yeah, yep. And I stayed there over the summer. And I attended every training session that Tom Gamble did, wrote down every one of his programs that he set for his swimmers, because he had a gun team. They were national champions, and he had them all there. And he also organised for me to go and see the other top coaches, people like Sherm Shabbour.
Sure.
Sherm Shabbour was from Sacramento, and he coached a woman called Debbie Meyer, who held the world record for everything from 200 to 1500. She was unbeatable at the Mexico Olympics. An absolute gun of the time, Debbie Meyer. And a bloke called Mike Burton, who was a skinny kid who fell off a bike and broke his leg in a couple of places, was on the other side of the track. And Sherm Shabbour owned the country club.
Yeah.
It was a swimming and tennis place. And to get in there, you have to have a lot of money. And Mike Burton went up. He was a kid, and the doctor said, you've got to swim to fix your leg, mate. He said, Sherm, what can I do? He said, I want to swim with you. He said, you haven't got any money. He said, no, but I can work for you. I'll work after training. I'll clean all the dressing sheds.
Yeah, he was keen.
I'll come in early, and I'll mop the floors. I'll mow the lawns for you on the weekend, but give me a job and let me swim here. And Sherm Shabbour, who was an old fighter pilot from World War, he said, righto, son, we'll give you a go. And Burton finished up starting at the bottom, the worst swimmer in the team,
yep,
and worked his way up, just beating him one by one in the team until he was a double Olympic gold medalist in the 1500 freestyle. And I watched him, and Mark Spitz was in the team as well.
Yep.
Shabbour had Mark Spitz there while I was there. He trained him for his 7 gold medals at the Olympic Games. Oh, a huge team. And then he sent me up to Gary Hall Jr. This is what Gamble did for me. So I had all that knowledge of what the Americans were doing. I brought it back, and I wanted my kids to train in the winter to really get good. They wouldn't do it, so I said, oh, bugger you, I'm going to Sydney, where they swim in the winter, on the race Carlisle down there.
So
and Stephen Holland came to with me. He was a young 15-year-old kid. And the Hollanders said, come on, take him on for me. Well, I said, all right, he can live with us down here, and we'll see what we can do.
He was an amazing talent too, Laurie, wasn't he,
mate,
Stephen Holland?
I worked him like Shabbour was working Burton, and Debbie Meyer.
At that age?
I'd never seen it done before. And I worked him like that. He finished up breaking world records in training and got selected to go to the World Championships. Halfway broke two world records in the one race at the trials, where I was carrying on like the fourth job.
Have you unlike you?
Hello, darling. Sorry, I'm on the line. I'll talk to you later. I've got 2.5-year-old granddaughter.
Ah, that's beautiful.
Oh, it's lovely, mate. She's just been in having a bit of a dip. Anyway, finished up in Yugoslavia in 1973 with this fresh-faced, skinny kid, Stevie Holland.
Not an easy place to get into in the 70s, Larry.
Skinny, nervous, you know.
Yep.
And the gun goes, metamorphosis occur. This kid changes to a supreme destructive fighting unit, mate. More dangerous than a Iraqi Scud missile or ocean predator. And away he went. 800 metres, he breaks the world record. Well, I run up to the grandstand where all the Yank coaches are, look them in the eye, give them the old two up.
Yep.
And so get that into you, fellas.
Yeah.
And then Stephen keeps pumping. And I'm pumping a bit myself by this time. Anyway, comes up to 30 laps, the end of the 1500, and I'm about ready to just go nuts at the Americans. And as I start, Stephen doesn't stop. He tumbles and goes for an extra two laps. The rest of the field don't know what's happening. They tumble and chase him. So the 1500, the 30 lap, had become a 32 lap race.
32 lap race. Just because he could.
Again, and Stephen comes up to 32 laps. He tumbles and goes again. Everyone else stops.
Yeah.
And Brad Cooper, another Olympic champion who I coached at the time, he was in the same race. He'd never done an extra lap in his life, so he stopped at the 1500. He was the only one. He counted himself. But Stephen, he just kept going. What that official happened, jump in and stop him, and I just have to turn to the Yanks and say to him, look, maths is not Steve's best subject.
Obviously.
Very good for him. Huh?
Obviously not, Laurie.
He was one of the greatest swimmers Australia's ever seen. It's a tragedy that he didn't win. I stopped coaching in 1975 for a period of time, and I didn't take him to the 76 Olympics, and it's one of the regrets of my coaching career, because
really?
He was such a good 1500 metres swimmer. I'll tell you now, he would still hold the world record today. You can throw in your Perkinses,
yep.
You can throw in your Grant Hacketts, you can throw in whoever you want, but this kid was amazing. What he could do in training was amazing. His endurance capacity was beyond all belief. You just couldn't believe it.
That's...
He wasn't fast. He couldn't swim fast. But if he could swim 58, he could swim 58, 58, 58, 58, 58.
Over and over.
Over and over. He was that good.
That's a big call, you know, to say that if you had taken him to the Olympics...
He'd have won by half a length. That's... Honest to God. What happened when I stopped coaching him? He went to America.
Yep.
And he trained with Mark Schubert at Mission Viejo. At the time, Mark Schubert had a kid called Brian Goodell. Now, Schubert took all his programs that I had with him, because he kept a log of everything, took his programs over, gave them to Schubert. Schubert has this kid called Goodell. Holland was licking him in training, just knocking him over every day. But Goodell learned how hard he had to train if he wants to beat Holland. And that's exactly the same thing that happened to Ariana Titmus. She learned how hard, by racing against Katie Ledecky,
yep,
how hard she had to work if she wanted to beat Ledecky, the GOAT. And they beat Holland in the 76 Olympics. I watched it with tears in my eyes at home. Sad, because I wasn't coaching. And I know if I had. But at that time, there was no money in coaching. If you're a coach, you have to just... It was a fun thing.
Yeah.
And I had a young family. I had a one-year-old daughter.
Cool. Makes
and I just couldn't. I was coaching at 5 o'clock in the morning, then going and teaching school all day, a phys ed teacher all day, coming back home, going to the pool again, coming home at 8 o'clock at night, and my wife had my dinner on the table and a one-year-old baby crying.
Yeah.
And I finished up saying, look, this is 12 months before the Olympics. I said to to Stephen and his parents, I can't do this because there's no money for coaching. I can't keep it up and I've got a family to look after as well. So I gave it away and it's history how he got beaten.
He was
the best that I've ever seen anywhere training at any time. Unbelievable.
I'll throw another one at you. One of Australia's favourite ladies in a lot of ways, Tracy Wickham.
Oh, she was an animal, mate. She was an absolute animal. And as I said to you, it's what you do in the training pool that transfers to the races. And I had a bunch of boys, good distance men, good swimmers.
Yep.
I mean, they were state Australian champ. She used to get in there and do the same program they did, and at times she would lick them. And she'd be looking across at them, smiling, and saying, come on, boys, let's go harder. And she was an animal, mate, I told you. And the results, her results prove it.
Well,
she held the world record for something like 15 years after she retired.
She did.
Just so good, mate.
Well,
so good.
Would you agree, Laurie, that she's probably Australia's greatest swimmer never to win an Olympic medal?
Let me think about other people. I would say yes, she is. Yes, by far. Australia never to win an Olympic medal, yes, by far.
Yeah.
She held the world record for 10 or 15 years later. I tried to get her involved in marathon swimming after she got married.
Yep.
And I knew nothing about marathon swimming, mate. And so we went to our first big... No, we went overseas first, and she went overseas, Lake Dresimino in Italy, because her husband was an Italian and he could speak the language. So we said, let's start over here.
Yeah.
Donkey licked them in that swim over there. But it was a warm climate. Anyway, there was a big race, major Australian race, in the Swan River in Perth, the first time she'd ever had to swim in cold water, and she hated cold water. So I said, well, grease her up. You'll be all right. So I got all this slam, this will be good. And I caked it all over her body.
Yeah.
And then I said to her husband, mate, I think we need to cake her on the back and on the chest as well so that she's totally protected from the cold because she hates it. So, I was pretty smart, you know. So the husband caked her up.
Yep.
And she got in. And we went about 1,000 metres and she was going fast. And then she started to slow down. I said, what? And I was in the boat beside her. I said, what are you doing? She said, my togs are heavy. I said, I don't know. Don't be so stupid. I said, get out there and go, toughen up. She said, Laurie, my togs, I can't swim. And what had happened? I said, well, pull them down. No one's going to look. Just pull them down.
Yep.
And she said, I'm not pulling the togs down for anyone. There'll be television crews around and everything. I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
So she kept swimming. But what had happened was, that lamb's wool that we caked her with all over had got into the pores of her swimsuit.
Yeah.
So it became like
lead.
A big bubble, lead. She was dragging water all the time through her swimsuit, you know. And that was the last time she ever swam a marathon swim.
I could probably.
And I was looking at that to try to get her back into the sport. And then into the Olympic Games after she'd got in. But unfortunately, my lamb's wool fat...
Didn't work that well.
Didn't work so well, mate.
Well, you actually chose her for the 1980 Olympic team, didn't you, even though it was boycotted?
Yeah, yeah. She... Now, some went, but she didn't. She didn't go because of the boycott. And Michelle Ford, one of her great rivals, went.
Yep.
And Michelle won 2 gold medals there. So it would have been a great race had Tracy gone. I'm not saying she would have beaten Michelle, because Michelle has been world record holder, and she's a tough cookie, Michelle. She's now working for the IOC in Switzerland, wherever they are in Switzerland.
Yep.
And she's a great lady, a great swimmer, and a great Olympic champion. She was coached by Dick Gain from Carr's Park. And Dick Gain, that's in New South Wales, Carr's Park. Dick Gain was started off as a garbo, mate. An old garbo.
Yes.
But he somehow got into the swim coaching game. And, mate, he produced more world champions in all different sports, in triathlon, in swimming,
Unreal. In
boxing, in rugby. He had a bucket load. I've never seen anyone coach. Had no coaching accreditation at all. Didn't want to get his coaching accreditation, Dick. But his kids flogged everyone. They beat everyone, and it was in all sports. Dick Cain, mate. Great character, and a great swimming coach. Really great swimming coach. I've got a lot of respect for Dick, even though he hasn't got a piece of paper to say he's a coach. As far as I'm concerned, he's one of the great coaches that Australia's ever produced.
Laurie, I think one of the more famous moments in Australian swimming history is yourself and Duncan Armstrong. He was ranked 46th of the world as he entered those Olympic Games in Seoul, and I don't think you acknowledge him as an underdog at all. Is it true that you absolutely flogged him in, you know, ground him into the ground in training?
Oh, mate, we worked. I'd seen what the Yanks are doing, and in the early days, and I thought if we're gonna win. We got the East Germans to beat. They're on the juice. We got,
that's true.
We got some tough opposition. We've got to be totally primed if we're going to win it. And we saw at the Commonwealth Games 2 years before how he won the 400. He must have been 20 metres behind the British guy at the 200 metre mark with still four laps to go. And he wore the guy down just bit by bit and overpowered him at the finish. And I thought, this kid's got a potential. And from then he said to me, he said, I want to do a Johnny Sieben.
Sure.
He said, I want to win the Olympic gold medal. I said, mate, we better make a pact. If you want to do it, I'm going to hold you accountable. I'm going to flog you. But if you want to do it, you're accountable. You make a pact that you'll do whatever we say.
Yep.
Which he did.
Well, yep.
Like, one of the things I had him doing, I had a weight belt, kilo weight belt that they take you down to the bottom of a pool when you go diving, scuba diving, you know?
Yep.
I said, well, your kick's not that strong. You stay back every night after everyone goes home. I'll stay back with you. We're in the diving pool. It's the big diving pool, which is 30 feet deep, so they don't hurt themselves when they dive in. I said, you put the weight pillow on, you hold your hands above your head, and we'll kick for half an hour every night after training. So you do that extra 5 hours a week, just kicking like that.
Jeez.
He said, yeah, I'll do it. So I found this is a very, very good exercise. If you don't kick, you drown.
You drown.
So
it's pretty simple, Laurie.
Yeah, pretty simple maths, mate.
But when
kick or drown.
When you have a look at that Olympic final, you had Matt Biondi, Michael Gross, the Albatross. They were wildly decorated Olympic champions. It was
highly, highly decorated, mate. There were four world record holders in that race.
Well, is it true that I read that you actually convinced Duncan over a number of months that he could do it mentally?
It was him, mate. But what I used to continually say to the kids, when you step on the blocks at the Olympic Games, I want you to be able to look to the left and look to the right and honestly say, I've done everything possible to be here.
Yep.
The time has come. Let's boogie. Let's race. If you beat me, you're too good for me.
Yep.
But let's have a go. And in addition to that kicking at night, his father used, we got an old skateboard. I turned the wheels sideways on it.
Yep.
Because I thought he wasn't quite strong enough in the upper body as well. turned the wheels sideways on it, and then he put a pair of garden gloves on, and his old man, in the middle of winter for 6 months, used to go down to the bottom of the hill. They lived on a little hill on a ramp that went up a couple of hundred metres. And for half an hour, he'd pull himself up lying sideways on this skateboard. And he used that to strengthen his upper body, his shoulders, his core, his driving muscles for his freestyle technique. And his father used to walk down with him. They'd go to the top. He'd pick up the skateboard and they'd walk to the bottom again. And then they'd walk back together in silent communion. So he did that.
In the wintertime.
All the time.
John Seaven.
He did that for 6 months. Amazing. Because if you want to be a champion, if you want to be an Olympic champion, you do things that other people don't do.
Don't do. John,
you do things that other people are not prepared to do.
Well, that's easy said, isn't it? You pull yourself up a hill in the middle of winter on a skateboard with wheels. It takes a lot of mental commitment and just toughness to go ahead and just keep doing it, Laurie.
Yeah, and the father walking down with him. And his father used to say to him from a kid, no pressure was ever put on him. But his father used to always say to him, mate, get out there, have fun, and by the way, break a world record.
Yeah, that's fair enough, too.
He said it every time from a 14-year-old kid when he came down to train with me as a 14-year-old kid. And he finished up at the Olympic Games doing as his father told him. He broke a world record
and
won the Olympic gold medal.
And beat a couple of absolute... Yeah.
That's the time to break the world record at the Olympic Games. Best
and time. Beat two decorated Olympic champions to do it as well. So,
correct.
John Seaven, Laurie, I remember, well, who'll ever forget that swim? That was a 200-metre butterfly in 84. He also went on and swam in another two Olympics. I don't think a lot of people realise, John Seaven.
No, but Jono forgot how he got good. Jono, when he was a 17-year-old kid, didn't miss a training for 12 months.
Yep.
When he broke his arm, he put a cast on and came in and kicked the whole session with a cast on his arm. Never missed a training session for 12 months. Butterfly, never broke butterfly in his life from a 10-year-old kid right through. So he'd paid the price. After the 84 Olympics, when he was Olympic champion, everyone wanted the piece of Jono.
Yep.
Every politician wanted to stand beside him and get a photo. Everyone wanted to buy him a drink at the bar. And, mate, for a young 17-year-old kid with no sponsorship, no money, having people buy him drinks and all this, it was just...
Too much.
Crazy stuff, mate. He got a scholarship to go to Bond University to study law because he was a smart kid. Smart. Anyway, with all this hoo-ha and people asking, come here, do this, do that, talk here, speak. He forgot how he got good. And so he used to come leading into the next Olympics. He'd miss two or three training sessions. He'd come in next day and say, Jono, you can't
do that.
Miss training and think you're that good that you're going to be Olympic champion. You can't do that. Oh, Laurie, it's okay. Once the trials are done and dusted and we win, we get in the team, then I'll show you how to train for the next 6 months.
Yeah.
I said, mate, you've got to get first or second at the trials. If someone beats you, you're not going to make it. He said, Laurie, who's going to beat me? Who's going to beat me?
Wow.
Anyway, he missed training. He'd go down the surf. I'd say, mate, you can't go to the surf. Go down later to the clubhouse, the lifesavers. Go down low. Oh, no, Laurie, I've got to get down early for patrol. He said, no, I'll do some ins and outs and I'll get on a surfboard. It'll be good for me. I'll strengthen my shoulders. I said, Jono, that's bullshit, mate. You need to be doing the training here, then go down and do the ins and outs and the on the paddle board. Do that as an extra,
yeah.
Not as an instead of. I'll be right, Corrie, you wait and see. Anyway, the trials come. First night, 100 butterfly. Jono wins it.
Yep.
Too good, too fast. So he's in the team. He comes up. He's the first one selected. So I told you I'd make it. I said, I didn't doubt you'd make it.
Yeah.
Then the 200 comes, and he gets third.
Well, there you go.
Which means he can't swim the 200 butterfly because the other two boys are ahead of him.
Yeah.
But one of those boys had put himself out of the final the night before. He scratched himself, which means Jono could have gone in if I protested, gone into the final. But Jono wasn't in the final. But if I'd have protested, then that kid would have missed his opportunity to go to the Olympics. Well, I couldn't do that.
No. Not
and
if...
And so Jono sat on the sideline and watched. And the head coach at the time, Bill Smeaton, said, look, we want our best swimmer in. So if Jono trains hard and can do a time trial, such and such a time trial, we'll put him in because the other boys made the team also as a relay swimmer. So he'll go to the Olympics and be a... I said, oh, that's big, Bill. So I told Jono, and I've never seen a kid train so hard in all my life.
Yeah.
Then he got given a time trial, a faster time than what he'd done at the trials. A time trial in Canberra.
Okay.
He missed that time that was given to him. I said to him, mate, this is your chance to get into the 200 butterfly. Shave down. Shave down and let's go a fast time. He said, I'm not shaving down. I'm saving that for the Olympics. Yeah. I should have whacked him in the mouth.
Yeah. Well, he just hadn't listened to you, Lauren. The results weren't there.
He should listen to me, you know. And he said, no, I'm not shaving down. And then he missed the time standard by a hundredth of a second.
Hundredth of a second.
Well, I shaved down, he'd have been in, and he'd have won that Olympic gold medal again. It's only been done by one other swimmer, I think. Anyway, it's history. He's successful now in life and a successful businessman with three great sons, two young sons, and great wife. Successful business and doing pool building and all that sort of stuff. But you know what? He should have been a bloody lawyer because he argued a toss with anyone.
You must be pretty proud of the three or the four main ones. Well, you know, Duncan, John and Tracy have all gone on and, you know, Order of Australia medals and, you know, Tracy Wiggins and MBE. It must make you very proud, Laurie.
Mate, I'm still friends with all these kids. They ring me up all the time.
Yep.
They're not kids. They're young men and women now. They're in their 50s.
Yeah.
Young men and women, which is... And it's lovely to think that they're still there, you know. And even another young kid who swam with Jono, who... Justin Lemberg, who got a bronze medal in the 400 freestyle in 1984 when Jono won the gold medal. They trained together, those kids.
Yep.
That is another great story. He came back to the bronze medal, so all the kids now in the squad...
They got a medal.
...forever call him Bronzy because he didn't win the gold medal. So what's Bronzy doing, you know? It's now become a bit of a joke, but every time I have to call him Bronzy, I cringe.
Yep.
Because he got beaten by a tenth of a second in the 400 metres, which is nothing.
Yeah.
A tenth of a second.
It's half a
touch. You can't click your fingers inside of 10 seconds.
No.
You can't click your fingers twice inside 10 seconds. You can't do it. So that's how close it was. And I just, you know, I blame myself because I said to him, mate, you've got to get your turn better because there's seven turns in a 400. You improve it by 0.1 each lap.
Yeah.
So that's seven times 0.1. That's 0.7 of a second. You're a body length in front of everyone. That's what you've got to do. I'm going to go to the school next door to you. There's a primary school there with a swimming pool. and I'm going to team it up with the principal for you to go down and practice your turns every day, extra, for an hour, or three quarters of an hour. Let's make it three quarters of an hour. And he did that religiously every day because the pool was only 2 doodles away from his house.
Yep.
Mate, I never went to see him once. So every turn he did was shitty. If I'd have been there correcting him,
yeah,
he'd have been Olympic champion. I regret that every time I call him Bronzy.
Bronzy.
It was bad coaching and I'll never do it again. So if there's any young coaches out there listening to this program, don't be a goose. Get down there with your athlete and work with them. Don't send them off to work when you are home playing.
Yeah, I suppose at the end of the day, Laurie, it's the little things you do as a coach that makes the big picture at the end of the day, I suppose.
It is. And you've got to be more committed than the athlete.
Than the athlete.
Because you've got to be there before them and after them. You've got to prepare the program for them. You've got to do all those things, mate. And you've got to be a friend, a father, a
psychologist, you
know, supporting everything they do.
Of the current bunch, the current crop of Australian swimmers, Laurie, who's your favourites? I reckon I could probably tell.
Well,
but
I have to say Titmus.
Yeah.
Ariane Titmus. I have to. And I go to people who's on the team who... But how can I say Titmus when Ronnie McKeon and his son and daughter have represented Australia,
yep,
and his daughter now, Emma McKeon,
yep,
has become on Susie McKeon. Susie went to the Commonwealth Games as well.
Oh.
So their daughter has become the greatest medal winner in Australian swimming history.
Yes, Emma McKeon has.
More than Gould.
Yep.
You know, you name the champions, she's ahead of them with her wins. So how can I say Ariana Titmus, mate?
Oh, there's an X factor about her, I think,
Laurie. That girl is an absolute superstar. And the guy, Michael Bull, who is coaching her, I coached him as a kid.
Yep.
So, you know, and Vince Rowley, who coached this young kid, the breaststroker, who won, Zach Stubbledy-Cook.
Yeah.
He was my assistant coach to John Sieben and Duncan Armstrong. So, you know, I'm highly involved with a lot of the great swimmers in Australia. Highly involved. And I love every minute of it. I love talking to the coaches about what they're doing. I love interacting with the swimmers. It's just a great sport, mate. It's a great sport, and it builds character in people. That's what I like about it.
It does.
Discipline. It teaches them goal setting and all those things. It's a great, great sport. You don't get too many swimmers going astray, and if they do, they come back to the fold.
Very true. There hasn't been very many of them over the years have ended up in the press for bad reasons or anything else. You're quite right on that one, Laurie. I've got to agree with you.
Yeah.
But I'm almost out of time. It's been an absolute pleasure and honour to chat with you about some of the greatest swimmers this country and the world's ever produced. It's just been a fantastic chat. And thanks very much for joining us this afternoon.
No, it's my pleasure. And we haven't even touched on the Mean Machine and,
yeah,
and some of the other great... I put over Olympic teams and we've only talked about a couple of them.
We'll have to do a part two, Laurie.
I've enjoyed it. Thanks, mate.
Thanks for joining me.
My pleasure, Damien.